This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, the Kentucky General Assembly is off to a fast start. What's next? But first, the use of force by police officers has come under scrutiny due to multiple recent police shootings across the nation. But tracking and reporting the number of times officers use force varies widely among police departments. James Pilcher, investigative reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer, has been researching how local departments monitor and report use of force incidents. He joins us this afternoon, along with Cincinnati Police Department Assistant Chief Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Thiege, to discuss the various types of force officers use on the job and how use of force incidents are monitored. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Colonel Thiege and James, thank you so much for being here today.
You're really welcome. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Start off by defining this for us. What are we talking about with use of force?
Okay, so when we're talking about use of force in law enforcement, it can take on many different forms. It's any time you use physical contact, restraint, or an instrument to overcome somebody whose level of resistance you're encountering. In Cincinnati Police Department, we consider certain use of the officers using their hands to manipulate somebody into compliance. We also have tasers, PR-24 or ASP, whatever the officers may be carrying, all the way up to firearms. And there's other instruments, devices in between that we have the ability to use.
Right. It's the actual use of the firearm, too, not just displaying the firearm, right?
Correct.
And just for clarification, an ASP is like a collapsible baton. It's like a metal rod stick that can be flipped out as a weapon.
So there are all different levels of use of force that the police department looks at.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
What kind of training do officers get as far as when it's appropriate to use force, when it's not? How many hours do they go through?
So from the time they're hired as a police recruit, they now spend 7 months at our police academy. And those 7 months, a large majority of that time is getting them up to training under the Ohio Police Officers Training Standards, so OPATA as we refer to it. And there's a multitude of topics that are covered. One of them just happens to be use of force. And they get hours and hours. I don't know off the top of my head the exact number of hours on use of force itself. So it starts with 7 months of training. Once they're released from the police academy, every sworn officer in our police department then goes through annual in-service training. And that, on an annual basis, includes several more hours of refresher on use of force. So they get it throughout their entire career, at least annually, to keep up with the standards in the industry.
How often is it that an officer would find themselves in a situation where they might have to threaten to use force or use force? I mean, how common is that on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, so if we're talking about the Cincinnati Police Department area or citywide, 24/7, obviously the officers are out there, they can encounter situations daily and sometimes numerous times a day where they are in a situation where force could possibly be used and justified. However, what we see is they don't always react to that situation in that manner because of their training that they've received on how to handle different situations. But they will encounter, at least one officer in our department will encounter something every day, a situation where they could use force, some level of force.
Has it gotten worse recently? Because it seems like, you know, people don't always immediately obey an officer's commands.
No, actually, I think what we're seeing is a trend that is just the opposite. Within the Cincinnati Police Department and the city of Cincinnati and the community that lives and works here, is we are seeing a decline. I know James has the numbers with him here today based on what he gathered when he was doing his story, but a lot of that is because of our and the community's efforts to build this relationship that is kind of unprecedented across the country right now.
Mm-hmm. What is the trend, James?
Well, I have the stats from 2010 through 2015. I don't have last year's 2016 stats yet, but the number of actual incidents of use of force have declined over the last 3 years, as have the number of arrests.
And we're talking CPD specifically.
CPD specifically. Okay. You know, other departments have different – and in comparing CPD to other area departments like Mason or Florence or somewhere like that is apples to oranges. But one thing that I did note is that the percentage of uses of force per arrest, which is something experts, criminal justice experts, told me to look at. That has risen a bit. It's gone up to – they use force on 1.8% of all arrests. And I've been told by some experts that anything above 2% is something that could signify issues at a particular department. CBD obviously below that at this point, and it is an urban department. I haven't collected the data yet. Actually, CPD is ahead of the curve in terms of how easily accessible and computer friendly this data is. Some departments I was collecting stacks and stacks of paper, and I haven't done any comparisons with comparable cities when it comes to overall use of force. The stories we published today deal specifically with fatal encounters, and those are on the rise. There have been 18 fatal incidents involving CPD officers since 2010, as compared with 12 all of last decade. So there's something happening there in terms of the fatal use of force. One of them was a taser incident, and the man died of a heart attack because he was tased. So, but the other 17 were shot and killed. So there's something going on in those numbers which is kind of what my stories were about today.
Mm-hmm. Colonel Thede, did you want to respond to what he's talking about here with the rise in fatal encounters?
Not necessarily the rise in fatal encounter, but I do want to make one significant note is we did have one individual who died during an arrest situation where the officers deployed the taser. But the saying that he died of a heart attack because of the use of the taser, I think, is not necessarily accurate.
I agree with that. The actual coroner's report said – he was obese and he was on cocaine, I think, at the time. So, and by no means am I trying to implicate that the officer did anything wrong. The guy was trying to rob a woman and jumped into her car at an ATM machine. So, and if anything, they could have shot him and they used a taser. And by no means, but, in terms of keeping the overall statistics, I felt it was fair to include that in the overall number.
And then the 18 that you're talking about, the person who was shot, did they display a weapon in the encounter?
The reports all say that all of them displayed some kind of a weapon, yes. Now, there are obviously people, family members, and whatever, and my story gets into a little bit of that, and some witnesses disagree with some of that, but the official findings were that all 17 had some kind of weapon or displayed some kind of weapon.
Yeah. I think, Mark, that's a significant note to talk about for a second is the number of encounters where officers are encountering individuals armed with handguns. There's the recovery of handguns across the country, and it's been on the rise. And so the number of times that officers have a situation with an individual who's armed with a handgun is obviously up. So while, we've had 17 from 2010 through 2015, mm-hmm. Each one of those has been justified because of the level of threat that the officer encountered with the individual.
And there was – I did do a story back in late 2015 about the rise in the violence, and one of the things that was corresponding with that was that CPD was seizing more guns. Now, at the time, I was told it wasn't necessarily because there were more guns on the street. They've always been there, but that CPD was making a more concerted effort to try to find those guns. That being said, it is very, very easy on the street and to get a gun. And one of the sidebars I wrote today that published today was also about how at least six of the individuals who were killed had a history of mental illness. And these people who many feel should have been institutionalized are out on the street, and they had easy access to firearms. So that makes it even more treacherous in some situations.
Colonel Thede, how much training are police officers getting these days on dealing with folks who have mental health issues?
Yeah, so during the academy class, they get it kind of under two different scenarios. One is we do 40 hours mental health training with our officers, how to deal with individuals out in the city that are mental health consumers, and we just know that they need a different level of service from us than somebody who's not have mental health issues. So they get this training through the mental health hours at the academy. They also get it through a de-escalation training. That's one of the things that we work on now annually that is also OPATA required. But we've been doing it for several years, even before the state required it, is de-escalating a situation when you encounter it instead of escalating, allowing it to escalate.
I know that it didn't make it into my reporting, into the stories, but in my course of my reporting, I know that CPD is in the process of creating a stronger partnership with local mental health agencies so that they have a more of an on-call system. So if they run into somebody who maybe barricaded themselves in, or they know that he's not on his meds or whatever, that they may be able to call him, either get advice for how to deal with them or get somebody on the scene that maybe talk that person down instead of having an armed confrontation.
Yeah. Mark, I think that kind of goes back to the question you asked originally was, how many times does an officer encounter a situation on a daily basis where they could use force? And I said that it's numerous on a daily basis. Is a lot of those needs to use force are averted because of the de-escalation training that they receive.
John, how rapidly does this happen? I mean, how long does an officer have to make a decision as to how to handle a situation?
It's pretty much a split-second decision, but knowing that they've been trained on how to handle it and how to assess it immediately and then decide their course of action is paramount. It's paramount in this situation.
Does CPD keep any stats on the number of times that they encounter someone with a handgun and that doesn't end in a shooting? Is that kept track of as well, or is it just times that people are shot?
Yeah. We just keep track of the times that we actually use force, any level of force.
And the only way you'd ever find that out is to actually go through individual arrest records and see if they're arrested or charged for illegal possession of a firearm. So that would be one way to look at it, but those stats would be hard to dig out.
Yeah. What's the most dangerous situation a police officer faces? I've always heard it's domestic calls. Is that true?
Domestics absolutely have the potential to be extremely dangerous for the officers because of the heightened emotional state of most people involved while at the scene. But I think to try to clarify what is the most dangerous, obviously any information that we get that somebody is armed with a handgun or any kind of weapon, but predominantly a handgun, is extremely dangerous. But, they're just taught to handle each situation as a level of danger that they assess it to be when they first encounter it. So it could be a lonely person on the street that you just don't know until you start that dialogue with the person exactly what that situation is.
I guess no matter how much training you've had, you just don't know what's going to happen until you actually experience one of these situations.
Correct. The officers are, they fall back on their training frequently, extremely frequently.
I can tell you that from another perspective, one of the concerns of the community that we wrote about today is what happens when there are questions about a use of force, especially fatal uses of force. But there doesn't seem to be a lot of transparency into the decisions into whether to discipline or criminally charge that individual officer. In in 10 of the 18 cases that we looked at for the fatals, some are still under investigation. None were charged or disciplined for any of them. Now, granted, they were all found to be justifiable shoots, but there were major questions, including one of them turned into a $200,000 settlement with the city, where the city actually partially apologized for some wrongdoing. So, there are still questions in terms of how the police department, how the city, and how the prosecutor handle situations where there might be questions after the fact, and whether or not there's a lot of transparency into, the decisions to discipline or charge an officer.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. If your daily schedule is anything like mine, you can use a break to unwind and relax. WVXU gives you a chance to listen and reflect on the issues of the day, to hear great music, and to listen in on conversations with some of the most interesting people in the world. So while you're listening, take some time out to make a pledge of support for public radio. It's been there for you. Now it's your turn.
You'll hear something interesting anytime you tune to 91.7 or 88.5. And if you made a contribution to help support the station this year, thank you so much. If not, we'd love to hear from you right now. Call 513-419-7155. You can also give online at wvxu.org or wmub.org. And thank you so much for your support. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guest this afternoon, Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter James Pilcher and Cincinnati Police Department Assistant Chief Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Thigy, as we discuss the various types of force officers use on the job and how use of force incidents are monitored. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Colonel Thigy, what's the process like after there's been a use of force incident? What's the investigative process like, and how long does it usually take to get through all that?
Okay. So let me just clarify that they are handled two different ways. If it's a tasing incident or something with the ASP or another level of force similar to that.
And again, as James pointed out, the ASP is a baton.
Correct.
Right, okay.
Correct. That is handled at the first line supervisors. They do the investigation. That's considered what we categorize as an administrative investigation. When we're talking about an officer who discharges their firearm, that begins with our criminal investigation section, begins that investigation with oversight from the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office. Simultaneously with that, our internal investigations unit also starts their part of the process here. And then also our citizen complaint authority comes on board with us to the scene and starts their parallel investigation. And so you'll have simultaneous investigations going on at any given time.
There's basically three levels to this. Lieutenant Colonel said, there's the internal CPD, which is led by their homicide detectives, but overseen or, you know, kind of monitored by their internal affairs. But then separately from that, especially in a fatal case or an injury case, assistance from the Hamilton County Prosecutor's Office, from Joe Dieter's office, will sit in on those interviews if there are – or look at the initial evidence and make a call pretty quickly. I interviewed Joe Dieter's, and he said usually within hours, if not days, whether or not he has enough or there's enough to consider criminal charges against the officer. And if and when – if they – the officers usually don't talk or are interviewed, and they can't force them to until they're said, you know, you're out of criminal danger, if you will. You're out of danger of criminal charges. And he told me that that's the case. FLP, the union, pretty much stops them from saying anything. And then the third level, this is an agency, Citizens Complaint Authority was an agency created after the 2001 racial unrest. By the collaborative agreement, it's a separate city hall agency that reports to the city manager, but it's overseen by a board of seven citizens that are appointed by the mayor, and they can investigate any use of force or complaint against an officer. They have their own investigators, although a lot of times they tag team and they rely a lot upon what the homicide detective said, but they have subpoena power. They can. Officers are required to talk to them, and then they can issue a recommendation for either discipline or exoneration that goes to the board. The board approves it, goes to the city manager, and the city manager can say, "Hey, you know, I know your internal thing didn't find this, but the CCA found this. I want you to, you know, discipline this officer." It's not really happened much, certainly not happened in fatal cases, but he does that by the authority. But anything that comes from either the chief or the city manager has to go through that collectively bargained discipline process, which can lead to reductions or eliminations in any discipline.
And Colonel Thigy, I guess it's some kind of a discipline matrix depending upon the level of severity?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join us. Now, James, one of the questions that you were looking into when you set out on this was how often do police threaten to use force?
Right.
And what was that like, trying to figure that out?
I mean, well, like I said, I polled last summer. I polled 26, 27 different departments for their use of force data, asking for threat of force data as well. And I can tell you that
there's no uniformity.
Okay. Across the board. There's no standardization. The FBI and the Justice Department are in the process of trying to create national databases around this, but there's different bookkeeping. There's different even within departments around here. Like Lieutenant Colonel said, they don't track threats. So they don't track how many times an officer might point his gun at somebody or point his taser, his or her taser at somebody, whereas other departments do. But here locally, I only found four that actually track that as a separate. Some include that as a use of force. So that's on their spectrum of use of force. It doesn't start when you put your hands on somebody. It starts when you point a gun at somebody. But there are only four departments that keep it separately. What was interesting is that three of the four departments that I tracked had major incidents involving use of force, either fatal or very controversial. And following those, they all saw a drastic decline in the threats of force. And that was Boone County Sheriff's Office and the Fairfield Police Department and the University of Cincinnati Police Department, obviously all of which, you know, you see in Boone County had fatalities. And then the Fairfield incident with the pool created another whole spotlight on that department. Mm-hmm.
Colonel Fiji, what about body cams, the role they're going to play? Do you think it's going to make it easier to keep track of use of force incidents?
Easier to keep track of use of force? No, because the officers are required to report anytime they use any level of force as it is
anyway.
Even before body cameras. What I think it will do is it will include another level of transparency for people who want to know exactly what happened during that force that was used.
I know that it's such a sticky wicket right now. The local FLP initially resisted using body cams, saying it was going to create extra work, and they didn't want that, you know, invasion of privacy potentially. But they did were able to get more money in their last contract, and that went away. I do know there have been efforts at the state level, including by one of our local representatives, Alicia Reese, to try to create a statewide standard for how body cams are used. But statewide, the FLP fought that, and that's gone back to the drawing board as well.
So how are departments – I mean, what kinds of steps are departments taking to improve the monitoring and tracking of use of force? What's CPD doing, for example?
Well, I think we have for years now had a very high level of accountability in tracking and reporting uses of force. We even go a step further is we look at – individuals throughout our agency in that the levels of force that they use, if they are above their peers' threshold. So we do some comparison in what is an acceptable level of numbers of force that are used on a quarterly or annual basis for these individual officers.
And I can tell you that in CPD's defense that their computer records are much more accessible and easier to analyze than other departments. It took me 4 months of calling City Hall, calling the police department in Cleveland just to get a list of all their fatal incidents for the last 5-6 years, whereas I had it within a week or two from CPD. So, the actual record keeping for CPD is one of the best in the state.
Mm-hmm. And that's why the federal government's moving toward creating some kind of uniformity.
Exactly. But the problem is you have, I think, 80,000 different police departments across the country at the state, county, and local levels, and they all have all kinds of their own individual circumstances. Some might be urban, some might be rural, some might be suburban. And you have state police, which have a whole different level of responsibilities. So, you know, it's going to be a long haul, and nothing has been mandated yet. So that's going to be the interesting thing, especially with the new administration coming in, is that how much momentum does this movement have and how much can they actually tell officers what to do?
And, of course, you've got
departments,
you're talking
say.
About 80,000 different departments and probably 80,000 different definitions of use of force as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And policies as well regarding
right.
use of force.
I know one of the policing, if you will, of police departments actually comes from accreditation and national professional associations like the International Association of Chiefs of Police, which just recently had their convention. So I know that they issue standards or, you know, recommended standards and whatever. But you're right. It's kind of left up to – it's one of the last real home rule kinds of things in terms of law enforcement that we have in this country.
You think we'll reach a point where it's uniform across the board?
I think there will be make efforts to get there. But I think, like James was saying, because law enforcement agencies are so different – And the needs of their customers are so different.
There's not a one-size-fits-all.
There is not a one-size-fits-all. You're right. You're right, Mark. I think we'll get close, but I don't think we'll get total uniformity. Hmm.
Colonel Theagian and James, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Cincinnati Police Department Assistant Chief Lieutenant Colonel Teresa Theagian and Cincinnati Inquirer investigative reporter James Pilcher. You can find a link to his articles about police use of force at WVXU.org. And coming up, we'll discuss the 2017 Kentucky General Assembly.